Welcome to Addressing Alaskans, where we feature community conversations around South Central Alaska. Join us on Alaska Public Media as we travel throughout our community and listen to local groups discuss what matters to them. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Ammon Swenson. Today's episode is an Anchorage Mayoral Candidate Forum presented by the Alaska Black Caucus. This event was recorded via Zoom on February 25th and was edited for length and technical clarity. You can find the full video of this forum on the Addressing Alaskans page on alaskapublic.org. Moderator and Alaska Black Caucus President and CEO Celeste Hodge Groudon speaks next.
We are thankful to the candidates who made the time to be here this evening. Bill Popp, Chris Tuck, Jenny DeCrappa, Brett Craig, Dustin Darden, Suzanne LaFrance, Dave Bronson, and Phil Isley. To begin, I'll ask each candidate to introduce themselves. Then we will move into a question and answer period using a combination of prepared and audience questions. Each individual will have 1 minute to introduce themselves. There will be a 30-second warning as well as a notification when time is up. Candidates, let's turn it over to you. Please introduce yourself to the Alaska Black Caucus community of members, allies, and community partners. We will begin with you, Bill Popp, followed by Chris Tuck, Jenny, Breck, Dustin, Suzanne, Dave, and Phil. And I'll remind you again if I need to. All right, beginning with you, Bill.
Well, thank you, Celeste, and thank you to the Alaska Black Caucus for holding tonight's session. Really looking forward to this conversation. I'm Bill Popp. I'm running for mayor of Anchorage. I first came to Alaska as a military brat back in 1968 and grew up here in Anchorage, was a graduate of East Anchorage High School, ninth class of 77, married my wife in 1979, who's a graduate from service. We have two kids and two grandkids that are living here in Anchorage. And we've got an extended family that when we get together, there's almost 20 of us in the room. It's three generations of Alaska born that are represented in our family here in Anchorage and in Alaska. I have a passion for wanting to take our city forward. I work for the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation as president and CEO for over 16 years. I have a wide range of experience going all the way back to 1974 in the private sector, the public sector. More boards, councils, commissions, and working groups than I can shake a stick at, all focused on things that I felt were important for moving Anchorage forward. I want to have a conversation with our community about what Anchorage looks like in 10 years and beyond. Where do we want to be? How do we want to accomplish that? I want to make sure that we've got a good foundation to stand on, a government that we can really rely on to deliver the services that we need in the time that we need them delivered in. I'm focused on getting everything set for Anchorage for the future, and I appreciate your consideration.
Great. Thank you, Chris.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you, Celeste. Thank you for the Anchorage Black Caucus for holding this forum. I am Chris Tuck. I am running for mayor because Anchorage deserves better. The past years, we haven't seen a whole lot of improvement. As a matter of fact, things have really gotten worse. If you look at the Anchorage homeless situation, I'm looking at providing city services and listening to the public. The assembly and the mayor really hasn't been working together well in making sure that we can provide good services to the public. As a matter of fact, at times, they hardly even acknowledge that the other exists. I do have a strong desire to make community efforts succeed. One of the best ways to make that happen is through active participation, active listening, and productive dialogue. Throughout my political career, that's what I've done. That's what I work to do is basically bringing people together, diverse groups of people. I was a union organizer for 17 years. As a union organizer, I learned that it doesn't matter what your political background is, doesn't matter what your ethnic group is, your age, your aspirations and beliefs. We all come together for one common goal. And I've been able to take those skills serving in the legislature to do the exact same thing. And I was able to form the first coalition in the House made up of Alaska Independents, Republicans, and Democrats, all pulling together, all setting aside the differences and coming together to move Alaska forward. That is what we need right now in Anchorage. And I want to be able to take my skills and deliver that for Alaska Anchorage residents.
All right. Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you, Celeste, and also thank you to the Black Caucus for the invitation. It's great to be a participant. Many forums have been exclusive, to a number of candidates. So as a millennial in Anchorage, as a lifelong Alaskan, feels really great to be able to share just my commitment with the community, my interest for Alaskans, and the vision that I have for the future. I was born and raised in Alaska. I grew up helping my mom actually run and train for the Yukon Quest, and I did red sled dog races. Quite a magical life, and the start to what has become the last 18 years of service, both to civic and nonprofit organizations. I have worked at Food Bank of Alaska for the last 7 years, helping lead that organization and our efforts to address food insecurity, much of which has been impacted by, of course, the pandemic. In the 18 years that I have been working and volunteering in the nonprofit sector, I've raised almost $40 million. And as we look at the needs of this community, we need to leverage funding. We need to leverage public partnerships. And we need to really look at how we can engage citizens to activate and address the community challenges in our community. Currently, I serve on numerous boards and support numerous organizations, and just appreciate, again, the opportunity to be a part of the conversation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jenny. Breck.
Hi. Thanks, Celeste, and thanks, ABC, for inviting me. Really excited to be here. I'm Breck Craig. I'm running for mayor. I'm a moderate independent. I feel like I'm representing the 60 or 70% of us that have no representation in the current mayor's office. By trade, I'm an IT consultant, mostly managing IT and high technology projects. I've been in Anchorage since 2013. I'm an oil brat, grew up in Egypt. I think from a diversity perspective, I grew up in a very small international school. We had 300 students from K to 12 and 30 different nationalities. So my small high school graduating class of 30 kids, you know, we were from all over the world. So I didn't have a real exposure to the issues that the Black community in America was facing until I came back from high school, because most of my friends were Black or brown or Asian, or, you know, I didn't get it. And it took me a long time to get it. I know that in the Anchorage budget, between the Equal Opportunity Department and the other department, there's 8 folks. And I don't know if that's enough, but I'm certainly going to look into it and make sure we're doing what we need to do to advance your agenda. And close that, I just want to say congratulations.
Okay. Brett, thank you. Thank you for the response. I need to remind candidates, we are limited with time. And so if you could please be sure to look at the time note that pops up. So please, you've 30 seconds and then wrap it up. All right. So Dustin Darden, we know that you have joined us. Dustin.
Hello. Can you hear me now?
Okay, Dustin. Go ahead. You have 1 minute to introduce yourself, please.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. My name's Dustin Darden. I'm running for the mayor of Anchorage. I was just now working on my Ninth Circuit opening brief to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I'm a civil rights activist. I'm inspired by Martin Luther King Jr. and Rosa Parks. Matter of fact, I'm driving a school bus, and I love being a school bus driver, and I love rights. I like people being able to express themselves. And I believe that what Martin Luther King did in his time is the mountaintop, the precipice of the mountaintop, which he spoke about, is in our generation. And it's a unity of people from all different walks of life, all colors, all creeds, all ideas, all thoughts, all imaginations that have one unifying goal. And that is a love for humanity, a love for mankind. And I'm just so encouraged, because when the darkness gets really dark, the light just blows the top off.
All
so,
right.
Yeah,
thank you, Dustin. But your time is up, and we will go to Suzanne LaFrance. Thank you.
Thanks, Celeste. Is it 1 minute?
1 minute.
Well, thanks to ABC for hosting this forum and to all of you for being here tonight. I want to first recognize that we are on Dena'ina land. I'm Suzanne LaFrance, and I appreciate the importance of these spaces for learning and conversation. The mayor's job is to serve all of Anchorage. I'm looking forward to talking with you all and learning more about the issues that matter most to the people here. As I've thought about running for office, I've thought about two things. First, how do we restore basic trust and competence at City Hall? And at the same time, how do we build a future for our community beyond that? I know we can do both. We can get the snow off of our streets and make sure those same streets are safe and welcoming, home to more housing and strong local businesses. It starts with good governance and getting the basics right, but we can't stop there and we don't want to stop there. We live in an incredible, diverse community with so much potential. My vision for community has three main parts: restoring competence, delivering better government, better services, making our streets and trails safer for everyone, and making Anchorage a better place to live, work, start a business, raise a family, and retire for everyone who lives here. I worked in the private sector for 25 years and served two terms on the Anchorage Assembly, including almost 2 years as chair. I know how the municipality works, and I know how to make it work better. I'm a lifelong Alaskan who knows we can do hard things when we work together. I'm looking forward to our conversation this evening.
All right, Suzanne, sorry. Thank you. And let's move on to Dave Bronson.
Thanks, Celeste, and thanks to the caucus for hosting this forum. Very much appreciated. I came to Alaska 33 years ago after 9 years of military service. I came up here with my wife of 38 years. She followed me a few months after I came up in the summer of August of 91 on a commercial airline commitment, business commitment of 2 years. And obviously, since I'm still here, I've demonstrated I've flunked public math. We've raised our two kids here. I've got a young son who's a pilot for Alaska Airlines and a daughter who's a PhD in biochemistry down in Arkansas. We're very proud of them. We raise them here. And then recently, my son just got married to a beautiful young girl here from Brazil, actually, not from here. And we're tickled pink to have a growing family. We love this city. We love this state. I think we have a lot to offer. There's more to do. I think we've accomplished a lot since we've been here. We brought the Port Pat project back online. That was stalled a bit. And now I think in the interest of food security, we've accomplished a great deal with that. We've advanced some projects in downtown development. And Mayor, I think there's a lot of positive, Dave, for the city going forward.
Thank you, Dave. Phil, go ahead, Phil. Sorry about that.
So I came to Alaska in 1964. I've been here pretty much ever since. I grew up in Southeast Alaska. I spent 22 years in the Army National Guard. I went from an E2 to an O4 major. Got a lot of experience in management and leadership. The reason I'm running is because when I looked around, I don't like the direction the city's going in. I'd like to retire here, but the way it's going, I don't think I can. So I'm attempting to put myself out there, not as a politician, but as somebody to turn the direction around of the city and kind of start following the charter and the constitution and making the city a better place to live on in like it used to be when I was younger.
All right. Thank you, Phil. So now let's dive into the questions and answers segment of tonight's conversation. Again, each candidate will have 1 minute to respond. Please share a brief story of a time when you worked with community leaders and members of the BIPOC communities. What was the issue that you worked on together and what success did you have? So BIPOC, Black Indigenous People of Color Communities. What was the issue that you worked on together and what success did you have? And we will start with you, Phil, so I don't miss you.
I don't believe that I've ever had a chance to work with an issue in the community. I did have some issues in the Guard where I worked with different soldiers of different minorities with counseling and working out their problems. But as far as in the community, I haven't really worked with them because I've never been in the position to do that.
All right. Thank you, Phil. Dave.
Thanks, Les. Yeah, just last week I had my third African-American Black entrepreneurial conference up in our conference room. They were both great experiences, or actually all three were great experiences. And it demonstrated quite clearly that there's a lot of potential, a lot of talent in our BIPOC community in the area of business development, small business development. We've supported that effort now for nearly 3 years. We're going forward. We're continuing to support that. And I'm very much encouraged by the energy, the entrepreneurialism, and the spirit of these young people who, and some not so young, that have done great work in developing their companies and employing people in this city.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Suzanne.
Thank you, Celeste. We have incredible BIPOC organizations and leaders here. And on the assembly, we got to bring in groups and identify opportunities to fund and build up organizations. And specifically, that was in the conversations surrounding the alcohol tax and how the three different areas for spending those funds were identified. That was done in conversation and collaboration with a number of different groups. And then also with the ARPA funds as well, where we brought in a number of different leaders and organizations and had discussions about how those funds could be dispersed in an equitable way and what that would look like.
All right. Thank you, Suzanne. Dustin.
More work to do.
Okay. Thanks. Dustin?
Yeah, I've actually been working with the BIPOC community, especially the Indigenous folks, from the day I got here in 2013. I was the senior program manager for GCI school access program, and my duties were to ensure that rural communities, Indigenous communities, got the broadband they needed. So it's been continuous since then. A lot of my IT clients are Native corporations. I have not had a chance to work closer with the African-American community in town, though, and I'm looking forward to doing that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Jenny?
So food insecurity affects BIPOC communities at a much greater rate than white communities. And at Food Bank of Alaska, I've had the opportunity and the privilege to work towards addressing those discrepancies in how we distribute food, both in Anchorage and across the state. And one of those opportunities came at the beginning of the pandemic, and we just looked at access, and we worked across community partners and organizations and with community members to look at expanding access to food resources at a time when people were losing their jobs, they were losing their homes, they were losing their housing, we had homelessness increasing. So I was really proud to work with the community and look at reducing those barriers to access. Some of them were just temporary during the beginning of the pandemic, but to make sure that food was available to community members, both at the beginning and throughout the pandemic. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
Okay. Thank you. I was fortunate to be able to serve on the curriculum development team back in 1993 for K through six. One of the groups that I chose to serve on is the social studies curriculum development team. And there I learned to listen to everyone that's involved. We actively engaged with community leaders and organizations within different cultural communities to get the insights into their concerns and help design and implement inclusive curriculum. That was my first opportunity to get to go. Former Senator Betty Davis, at that time she was getting ready to run for the school board. And so that participation really got me into the insights of not just the Black community, but all communities. And then also as an electrician, I also worked on the Christmas in May and Habitat for Humanities. That's basically doing construction projects for those in need, primarily focused in the Mountain View and Fairview area. So I got a chance to help those in the community that really need help.
Thank you, Chris. All right, Bill Popp.
Well, I think my most direct experience has been in the last 16 years at Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, working with members of the BIPOC community who are entrepreneurs trying to get their businesses started up, looking for ways to fund their businesses, ways to overcome challenges that were facing their businesses, as well as existing companies here in Anchorage, in particular, Eklutna Inc. or Siri. I've worked with those two companies on a number of different issues that they needed assistance with from my organization and to help to advance their needs and their interests. It's been a real fun and challenging and exciting experience working in particular with the entrepreneurs. There's nothing quite like helping somebody get a food truck started or getting a small retail business going or just a small services business. And it always excites me to stop and talk with entrepreneurs from the BIPOC community who are showing great success and just need a little bit more encouragement and a little bit more help and understanding what it is that they need to do to make their business even more successful.
All right. Thank you, Bill. And Dustin, if you're available, you can go ahead and answer that. If not, we'll move on to the next question.
So my sister, Elizabeth Darden, she's working with this organization, Harrison, Arkansas. It's called Hope 929, and it's an organization that helps disenfranchised people, including those of different various colors of skin. But one of the people on the board is George Floyd's uncle. And what she's doing is pretty phenomenal. She graduated to becoming a councilwoman in Harrison, Arkansas, and now she's working on getting housing. And she's going to spread across the map, but she's working on making housing and call centers to help get people employed and get them on their feet. So if you guys look up Hope 929, my sister Elizabeth Darden, she could work with whichever one of us winds up getting this spot for leader, because we definitely need help. And a lot of people are hating on her because of the kind of controversies that's been around that. But okay. I've been a victim of suffocation, so I understand what it's like to not be able to breathe by security officers.
Dustin, thank you for the response. We will move on. How would you address the labor shortage that small businesses, truly small businesses that employ lower skilled, non-college educational personnel and are facing right now? And so we will begin with Breck, then we will move on to Suzanne, and then we'll go from there.
I think we're going to have to tackle this a couple different ways. I think we're going to have to give the small business owners incentives and that will help them pay a market rate for labor. I know there's the labor shortage is so acute because we're losing people in the city, which is a reason why I think a lot of us are running. So incentives, because the pay is going to have to go up, and maybe encourage small business owners to come up with creative ways to keep their employees, maybe with, shorter work weeks, things like that. But it's going to have to be a holistic approach we're going to have to come at it from a number of different ways.
All right. Thank you. Suzanne?
Thank you. As we've seen over the past few years, the outmigration of working families and young professionals and just young people in general is one of the greatest threats to our economy and our community. We don't lack jobs, but we lack the people who live here. And so focusing on quality of life and cost of living is key to ensure that we have people here and we have workforce. It means also that we've got to get the basics right when it comes to governance. And it means too, we have to focus on creating the conditions for building more housing units so that young people can break into the housing market, and also promoting childcare so that families can afford and have access to quality childcare where it doesn't break the bank. And it means too, focusing on making our community a vibrant and safe place where everyone feels welcome.
All right, thank you. So we'll go next to Dustin and then Dave Bronson. Dustin, you're on mute.
Every time I have to press the button, apparently, but okay. I'll press my button when it's my turn. So I'm learning technology. So employment, you guys, if anybody knows anybody, I've done a lot of jobs in my life. I'm practicing a little bit of pro se law right now, which is a job, but my favorite job I've ever had is a school bus driver. So I think there's so many opportunities for school bus drivers, and you get your CDL training, paid CDL training. I'd advocate for that. Definitely a lot of school bus drivers, because they can wind up being other commercial drivers with those things. We need a lot of drivers. And, I think a lot of things we can make with our hands, things that we learn from our heritage, and creative ideas on, living off of God's creation and loving each other.
All right.
I mean, love. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Dave.
Yeah, I think small businesses are facing the same challenges that the municipality is. We are 46 police officers short. What I did is I unilaterally increased the pay of our senior officers, which we could do. And then I gave the rank and file police officers the single largest pay increase in the history of the municipality, because it was essential to do that. One, it was long overdue and well-deserved, but it was essential to retaining the best talent we could. Too many folks were leaving the state or going to the state troopers who simply paid more. And I suspect, in fact, I know small businesses are facing those same challenges. We're also looking at and actively engaged in negotiations with AMEA to increase pay for snowplow drivers. This is essential. We also did a job fair last month, which brought in 550 candidates, many of whom were interested in coming on to work with the assembly, to include also small businesses. So those are the things we need to do.
Thank you, Phil, and then Bill Pop.
So for jobs, we have 3,700 homeless people that could find employment, and I think that we should find something for each one of them to do. A lot of the programs that we have, if they do anything, they lose their incentives in the program. And so we should redesign these to where you can put them to work and they get enough to cover the rest. Because right now we have a lot of capable people that are living basically on supplements from different organizations. And if they go to work, they lose that and they can't afford to do without it. So if we integrated it together, we could put them to work and supplement their income so that we have a workforce and we have, and we're, it's costing us less money, if that makes sense to you.
All right. Thank you. So we'll go in this order, Bill, Chris, and Jenny.
Suzanne, could you just repeat the question for me? Because I've kind of lost track with the answers that we've been
getting. How would you address the labor shortage that small businesses, truly small businesses, that employ lower skilled, non-college educated personnel are facing right now?
Well, that's a really tough nut, because we have twice as many jobs being posted in Anchorage right now and wages are going up. And unfortunately, it's putting a lot of pressure on small mom and pop businesses, and it's making it extremely difficult for them in this very tough and competitive wage environment. You know, companies are going to, small business people are going to have to start becoming more innovative in terms of how they engage people. The other thing is that I'm all about getting upskilling going for workers to where they can improve their lot in life. So it's going to be a real, real tough road to move down. We can make a lot of promises. We do need to attract more people to our city. That's a message I've been delivering for over a decade now. Our labor force, our working age population is shrinking. I think one area where small businesses need to look is our senior community. I think that there are opportunities there for people looking for part-time work where they don't want to work full-time and would be potentially willing to settle for less pay if they had a work environment that would meet their needs.
All right. Thank you, Bill. And then Chris, and then Jenny.
Okay. So I was an instructor at the Alaska Electrical Apprenticeship School. I was on the board for Putting Alaska Resources to Work, most important resource, because human resources in an Alaska Process Industry Careers Consortium. When we take skilled, low-skilled workers, we need to make sure that they get past credit when they get into the more skilled crafts and start developing them and training them all the way around. Apprenticeship programs are the best way to do that. You take low-skilled workers and you develop the skills along the way and have classroom training throughout. So we need to have more accessibility to do that. We also need to encourage apprenticeship programs to make sure that they give the past service credit. So when someone is working in a job right now that's low-skilled, they know that even though they didn't make it into that apprenticeship school this year, they know that the work that they're doing will eventually get them credit. And so they do not lose hope and they keep working it and trying it. But it also starts at the junior high and high school level in promoting these jobs. We need to make the connection between the students graduating from high school and new employers and a little bit before that.
All right, Chris. Thank you. Thank you. Jenny, why don't you go ahead and answer that question?
Thank you. So certainly, I think the biggest challenge we're all aware of is childcare. Childcare is preventing thousands of Alaskans from joining the workforce. And when we're talking about lower wage, lower income, those are the communities, those are the families who are paying maybe more in childcare than their own wages reflect. So of course, those are the communities that are taking their children And they're raising them at home and they're not able to join the workforce. So I think childcare is the key component to increasing our workforce for our small businesses. And secondly, I think flexible work arrangements, those same families, some of them are working two jobs, they're managing single parent families, et cetera. And so giving them and providing them flexible work arrangements, in addition to ensuring that there's childcare access in this community, are really what we have as opportunities to leverage their impact in the workforce and just being able to be a part of the workforce. Thank you.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans on Alaska Public Media. Today's program features an Anchorage Mayoral Candidate Forum presented by the Alaska Black Caucus. Moderator and ABC President and CEO Celeste Hodge Groudon speaks next.
We want to be part of helping our communities be more just, healthier, happier, and safer. What investments would you support in BIPOC communities to support health and safety to all? What will you do to advocate for those investments? And we will start with you, Suzanne. We will go to Dave, Phil, and Bill, and then I'll come back. So that is Suzanne, Dave, Phil, and Bill.
Thank you, Celeste. So what investments would I do to support health and safety in the BIPOC community? Well, first, there needs to be a diverse team at the municipality that reflects the makeup of our community. And it's really important to, first of all, staff up the health department. We've seen the health department hit a vacancy rate of about 40%. And so I am committed to staffing up the health department so that they can continue to do the community health programs and outreach and education that especially are helpful to members of the BIPOC community. And then like with ARPA and the alcohol tax, we need to be led by and listened to the BIPOC community to determine what investments would be beneficial. I also believe that when it comes to public safety, we need to get those body cameras implemented. Those are long overdue. So that is high on my list of priorities to make sure that that gets done and to also ensure that the municipality is properly staffed up to be in a position to be able to provide those supports and investments as well. And I think my time is up.
All right. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, thanks. I think it's essential that we provide safety for especially municipal employees from the office of the mayor. We also need to increase opportunities for employment within the municipality. In the last 2.5 years, through our Office of Equity and Justice, that's Junior Amabai, we've increased minority employment within the municipality from about 22% to 26%. That's a number that we're proud of, I think. And we've done that by communicating to the BIPOC community that there is great opportunities within the city, within the municipality. We have a great healthcare program, even though we don't pay the highest compared to the oil companies or the state. Our healthcare program within the city is very well. In fact, I compare it to what I had in the military and what I had in the airlines. It is clearly better. We also began supporting a year and a half ago the Academy's concept with working in concert through our Office of Equity and Justice with the school district. The Academies is a great opportunity to direct the young men and women who are coming up through high school to get the jobs that they need.
Thank you, Dave. Phil?
I think probably for healthcare, I think we should coordinate with private healthcare individuals and make a streamlined way that they can get the help they need in the private sector. We can't continue to grow the government and expect people to live here because it'll just be too expensive. For safety, one of the biggest things we could do is make sure everybody has a job. A full-time job takes a lot out of your day. And if you're enabling people by giving them housing, clothes, and food anytime they want it, and they can wander the streets at night, you're adding to the problem. And I'm not saying that we should deny this to anybody. I'm just not saying we should hand it to them for nothing. They need to be able to start to work for it because that will build their self-respect and their self-esteem. And that's probably the biggest reason they're in the place they are right now, is because they've lost that self-esteem. And also, if they have a job, it allows you to identify any problems that they have so you can deal with the individual problems.
All right. Thank you, Phil. And Bill Popp.
Well, I'm a big fan of the public health nurse program, and I think that we need to work to expand that in partnership between the city and the state through our Department of Health to get health nurses out there working with the BIPOC community to deal with the unique challenges that many in that community face in terms of public health and their own personal health. I think we also need to work on making our streets safer, and that's all about getting our police department fully staffed up, as well as making sure that our fire department doesn't have equipment set aside for budget purposes to shut it down and take it offline, or to have crews that are not fully staffed and that limits their ability to respond unless they have meet national standards before they can enter a building. You know, these are some of the challenges that we have in our community, in the fact that our public safety systems are not as well funded as they need to be, and definitely not as well staffed as they should be. And we really need to work on that to deliver better programming and better public safety and health to all of our members of our community.
All right. Thank you. Next, Chris, Jenny, and then Brett.
Okay. Thank you for the question. I appreciate it. In addition to making sure that we have a strong public safety resources out there for the public, and also making sure that we have affordable health care, we also need to ensure that all of our city services, including education, healthcare, law enforcement, are accessible and sensitive to the needs of our diverse population. And this really involves services in multiple languages, cultural competency, making sure that we have training for that with all of our municipal employees, and outreach programs to our communities to make sure that they are aware of the services that we're going to be able to provide. I would also promote a more diverse civic engagement from our community, making sure that, going back to our cultural leaders, making sure that we are actively representing their members, but also getting their members involved in city government as much as possible. And so being a part of the administration is going to be key in making that happen.
All right. Thank you. Jenny.
I think access and understanding is really important when it comes to these topics. We need to ensure that everyone in our community has the access to the services, as discussed before, that their language services, every ability for every single community member to have equal access to these is really important. I think the understanding comes to training. I really want to elevate diversity training for administrators, for community members, and really lean into the current nonprofit and civic organizations that are already serving communities, and making sure that we understand what are those barriers, what are those very specific needs. I think body cameras are great, but I think that that understanding and that appreciation for our various cultures in the community, and for our community to be led by example and to have empathy and understanding and to want to work together and to want to make sure together that we're a safer community, that we have health resource access for all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Brick.
Thanks. And Jenny, I liked your response, and Phil as well. I think from my perspective, the number one thing to do is to figure out where all the money is going. There's such a need in the BIPOC community and even within the Anglo community for support and help. We spent $170 million in the last 6 years, according to the Anchorage OMB office, on the homeless. That's just the city, from all sources. And that's not counting all the nonprofits. I think when I'm mayor, we're going to take a close look at where all that money is going. Because like Phil said, I think we prioritize the folks that are looking for a hand up, and we help them with that hand up, and we help them get the training, whether they're BIPOC or whatever. And then we figure out what to do with the rest. And I think health and safety, the safety of the city streets is critical, as well as increasing our Equal Rights Commission and Equity and Justice team. We've got eight people total right now.
All right. Thank you.
Much longer. Thanks.
Thank you for that. We know that increasing access to healthcare, mental health, and substance use disorder treatment requires a strong workforce. We also know people of color benefit from receiving care from providers who look like us, who look like them. Which policies would you support to increase representation of people of color in the healthcare workforce, and particularly in behavioral health? We will start with Chris Tuck, then Bill Popp, and Jenny. in that order.
Okay, so the question is how do we promote different cultures into the healthcare industry? Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, basically, I think it comes down to admissions, promoting. It starts at getting them interested in the healthcare industry in the first place, and then make sure that they are successful along their career path in making that happen. And so we need to provide more opportunities for those who want to get involved in the healthcare industry to get involved.
All right, thank you. Bill Pop, and then Jenny.
I think it's all about education and training to make them more, make the BIPOC community, help the BIPOC community be more competitive in the workplace. If you don't have the skills and the industry certifications, a certified nursing assistant, an electrocardiogram tech, any number of other different certifications that don't require a college degree, you can't compete for a lot of the great jobs that are available in the healthcare industry. And I believe the Academies program that is being launched, the Academies of Anchorage through the Anchorage School District, will have healthcare pathways that will allow students to graduate from high school ready to go to work in the health industry. And then I think we also need to work on our post-secondary education and training opportunities to find ways to increase the capacities in those systems so that adults can go and get those degrees, those certificates in particular, because there's a huge number of positions in the healthcare sector that are going unfilled or being filled by out-of-state workers coming up here to do shift work. And that these are just big challenges for our labor caused by our short labor force.
All right. Thank you, Jenny.
So I would agree with Bill and also say in the immediate term, it's removing barriers to access, barriers to entry. I think there are a lot of organizations and companies who've done well to remove some of those barriers, those requirements that maybe historically do not make sense and do prohibit people in our BIPOC communities from participating. I think medium term and long term, we do need to look at access to education and training, and particularly free and reduced education and training to make sure that those, again, barriers to access that traditionally exist in terms of who has money and can do what is there. But then I think when we look at the larger community problem, I'm probably going to talk about childcare a lot, but that is really preventing people in our communities, particularly BIPOC communities, from joining the workforce, from even participating in education and training programs. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Breck and then Suzanne.
Yeah. Again, Jenny, I like that response as well. And I agree. Short term, I don't sense from my personal experience that there's a lot of issues with the BIPOC community being representative. But what I do see is when you get up in the pay scale with the doctors and the physicians assistants and thing, they tend to be much wider. And I think that's because we don't have a medical school in the state. And I know that's a much longer term goal, but I think that's going to help a lot if we start home growing and cultivating our healthcare industry instead of importing everybody from locum nurses and doctors, you know, from out of state, like Bill brought up. So it's a problem for sure that we, I'm sure, can solve.
All right. Thank you, Suzanne. And then Dave.
Thanks, Celeste. Well, first, we definitely need to build up a diverse mental health workforce and support university programs that are doing this. And we've got UA here, too, that I believe there's potential to even do like apprenticeship programs with the municipality, for example. I think that's something that could be explored. And definitely the second piece of it is needing to increase access on the other side so that BIPOC folks can both get these jobs, but also access these critical services as well. And again, I think, you know, supporting those university programs and technical training opportunities and maybe exploring apprenticeship programs as well that, you know, might work at the municipality level. These two things go hand in hand. Both are important.
All right. Thank you, Suzanne and Dave.
Thanks. Yeah. What we've done is we've created a shadow program that whereas in the municipality where some jobs can be shadowed by young people who might be interested in a job with the municipality. We've also have in place an internship program. We've had multiple interns on the eighth floor. It gives young people an exposure to government at large, politics, and how government functions to see and give them the opportunity to see if they want to come and work for government. The other thing we did is we did a very large, successful job fair at the Denina several weeks ago. And we're going to have another job fair at the Sullivan Arena on April 11th. And we anticipate more participation from private companies participating in that. That, in aggregate, exposes more people to job opportunities, not just within the municipality, but within the city at large. So those were great successes, and we're going to keep moving on those.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Phil?
I think we'd have to find a way to cooperate with the Anchorage School District, and perhaps we could put some mentorship programs in and bring back, say, a pinstripe program. The other thing is talking to school counselors. The Army National Guard used to produce a lot of nurses. And once they go through that military training, they're pretty close to coming out and getting certified. Another thing that you could do that would take a little bit more time is to, well, you'd have set up scholarship programs, which would work. And you have to get the people interested in doing it. And a lot of times that's the hardest part, getting people interested. But there are programs available. The university had a program to run nurses through, but it was only like 8 or 10 nurses a year. And we could expand the university to where they had a nursing degree program and a PA program if we could get them on board with it.
All right. Thank you, Phil. And we are winding down. We have 9 minutes, believe it or not. And so I'm going to ask one additional question, and then we're going to go to the chat. Truth and the understanding of our history is important for all Americans. It is especially important as we become a more diverse society. Should history be taught in schools through the lens of race and power? Why or why not? And we will start with you, Breck, then we will go to Bill, and then Chris.
Good question. As a political science major, that's dear to my heart. I think history needs to be taught from it within a very holistic, that's my favorite word, 360 approach, from both power and from the perspective of the victors, as well as from the perspective of the victims. We're evolving as a species. Our intellect is evolving, and the way we learn is evolving, and we can certainly handle it now. I mean, the days are gone when, you know, it was the victor who wrote the history book. So
thank you, Bill, and then Chris.
How do I follow that? Because Brett just basically nailed down pretty much everything I wanted to say. I feel very strongly that we need to speak in truthful terms in educating both our young people and our adults in what our history is and in the effects of what has happened in the past on today. And so that we can learn the lessons from history that we truly need to learn, so that we don't repeat some of the horrors of our past, some of the misdeeds of our past. And we need to look forward to how we can be a better people as a result going forward.
All right. Thank you, Jenny.
So I would both echo the past two responses. I think the key is understanding truly from all of those diverse backgrounds and how it affected people also just at various ages and what that has meant for the multi-generations that have, you know, come from this experience, that have this history. So really understanding that and then also understanding what it means for the future, I think, is equally important. I think history is important, and understanding that through the lens of those who've experienced it, but also what that means going forward, how we do work together to ensure that those atrocities are not committed by our communities, by our future communities, and what's really the opportunity to leverage the history to make a true impactful change in the future. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And let's go on to Suzanne and then Dave.
Thank you. Well, first off, education is so important. It is absolutely critical that we fund our public schools. And we need to be clear-eyed about our history and talk about its complexities if we're going to make things better in the future. Race and power are real dynamics in our history and in our present. And we need to trust our public schools and educators rather than create environments of fear. You know, I grew up in the Mat-Su. I'm a proud product of our Alaska public school system. And I have to say, I'm very concerned about the censorship and book bans that are happening out there, because I really believe it is an impediment to teaching history in a way that is honest, teaching any subject in a way that is honest and inclusive and clear-eyed, again, about our history and our present.
All right. Thank you, Suzanne. Dave.
Thanks. I think it's essential that we teach our history as accurately as possible. That is, both the greatness and our failures. Our greatest failures were, of course, the issue of slavery in our country and the treatment of Aboriginal Americans, to include Alaskans. We failed on those dismally as Americans, as a country. And if we don't learn from that, we're doomed to relive our history. And so we have to teach, we have to keep learning, so our children don't make the same mistakes that, quite frankly, our ancestors did. One book that I recently read, or I read about a year ago, was The Road to Dawn by Jared Brock. It's the story of one of the most inspirational people I've ever met, and that's Josiah Henson. And he was a slave. He escaped to a town in Canada called Dawn, and it was a story of his life. And I can't recommend a book more than that book. And Josiah Henson was the character after whom Harriet Beecher Stowe patterned Uncle Tom, of all people. So,
Dave, I'm sorry.
I think that's the kind of education
need. Thank you, Phil.
So I feel history is very important, and mainly because if we understand history, we won't repeat it, or we shouldn't repeat it. But the two things that you really need to remember about history is it's always different depending on which side you're standing on. The same history can be repeated differently by a whole bunch of people. The other thing, it is history, so you shouldn't let history define your future. You have to let it go so that you can move forward in progress. It's there to keep us from repeating the mistakes, not as a mold that we should go on it. The dangerous thing about history is a lot of times they put it in the schools and they teach a specific history with an agenda. Mao Zedong took over China by teaching his philosophy in the universities. Hitler started with the very youngest kids teaching them that he was God. It's a dangerous thing.
Thank you, Phil. And Chris, I want to make sure you were able to respond to that question.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And these are really very good responses. I've enjoyed listening to all of them. And that's really the goal, right? The goal is to make progress, bring out the best of the cultures that uplifts mankind through music, through art, and most importantly, through history. And, history is getting boring because people are only teaching the facts and the figures, the dates and the times, but not really going into the backstories of really what makes it but really the elements that made it all happen. I read the book, People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. I think that's a really good example of the way that we need to teach history, because by knowing the stories and knowing how it all happened really inspires and helps us to also know that we too can make it happen. And so, but I totally, appreciated all the comments, because I think we're all kind of see the same vision there, and that is to make sure that we have history that's interesting, engaging, factual, and that it promotes the best of mankind. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all for contributing to this conversation. Candidates, let's turn back to you for closing thoughts. You each will have, 30 seconds to close with our community and offer any insights you haven't been able to mention in today's forum. We will start with you, Bill Popp, and then go to Chris and Jenny.
Well, I get to open it, and I guess I get to help close it. Once again, I'm Bill Popp. I'm running for mayor. I am nonpartisan. I have not been a member of a political party for over 2 decades. I have not accepted offers to be endorsed by political parties, because I believe at this point in time, our mayor's office needs to be totally nonpartisan. That we're focused on appointing the best professionals to lead our government and to get our foundation back underneath us so that we can have a bright opportunity and future for all of our citizens and to get our city back on track.
All right. Thank you, Bill. Chris Tuck.
Thank you for the opportunity this evening. I believe in the unlimited power of people sticking together. And throughout my career, political career, I've demonstrated that. Together, we can make Anchorage a place where ideas and innovation flourish. Education is the highest quality. As a result, the economy thrives, jobs are rewarding, and the homeless have hope. To Together we can make this happen. Please consider voting Chris Tuck for mayor. Thank you.
All right, Phil.
Are you believe that increasing the size of the government is not going to help? If you'd like to see us at least hold off a little bit, I'd appreciate your vote. I'm Phil Isley. Right now, our budget is like over $500 million for the city, and they're asking $900 million for the school. That's $1.4 billion. Our population is going down. We're all the way down to 280,000 now. I just don't see how this is all going to work out unless we start cutting the government.
All right. Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you, Celeste, and thank you to the Black Caucus for the opportunity tonight. For the last 18 years, I have been committed to nonprofit and civic organizations, almost 30 in total, working to make Anchorage a more inclusive, more equal opportunity community. And I really want to take that experience and that time and those connections that I have and move the needle all of the way. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm running for mayor, because I just believe in the power of community. But I also know that politics and policy is needed to really make change, the immediate, effective, and long-term change that we're looking for. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Breck?
Thanks. And Celeste, thank you, and to the Black Caucus as well. I'm running because I'm a moderate independent. And I don't think we've had a moderate independent in the mayor's office in a long time. I think that the current administration and assembly is controlled by a fringe group of folks on both sides. And I think the majority of us in the town in Anchorage are fed up with it, as I am. And I think I can do a better job. So that's why I'm running. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks again, Celeste, and to the caucus for this great opportunity. Greatly appreciated. In the last 2.5 years, it's taken a while, but I've built an absolutely outstanding team of senior executives in all key positions, from the municipal manager to the CFO to OMB and beyond. It always takes a while in a new administration to build that team, but that team is experienced, it's stable, and it's standing in the gap against some of the radical ideas, quite frankly, that come out from other parts of government. So I'd like the opportunity to continue, and I'd really appreciate your vote. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you, Celeste, and thanks to everyone for being here tonight. We live in an incredible, diverse community with so much potential, but we've got to get the basics right so that we can tackle our challenges around homelessness, snow removal, public safety, and the economy. We can only do this by having a diverse, dedicated team and staffing up the Muni. I'm Suzanne LaFrance, and I'm asking for your vote for mayor. And thank you again for being here tonight.
So thank you to all our candidates. Wish each of you the best of luck. And of course, we want to thank you for joining us as well. Until next time, good night, everybody. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us today for Addressing Alaskans. Today's program was an Anchorage Mayoral Candidate Forum presented by the Alaska Black Caucus. Full video of this event is available on the Addressing Alaskans webpage. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ammon Swenson. Thanks for listening.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. The views expressed are those of the hosts and participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.